Gone West, Chapter 19, The School for the Regenerate in Hell, Transvision, Monday, March 16, 1914. I seemed to be rushing through space at a tremendous speed, and then I found myself standing beside H. J. L. We were standing on a hillside, and below me, among the trees, I saw the towers and roof of a large building. It had quads and open grounds round it like a college. "What is that building?" I asked. "That is the college in which I at present live. It is the form of the building which was Queen's, Oxford, before the present classical building was put up." J. W. "Can I go and look over it?" H. J. L. "Perhaps at another time. But not now. I wish to tell you about my experiences in the schools of hell. I was first taken to the schools of those who have progressed from the lower depths of hell. You remember my chart, J. W.?" "Yes, I remember there were two divisions of the topmost division, the one you mention and the babes' school. I have seen a vision of the latter." H. J. L. "Well, I went first to the other schools, but have since been to the babes' school. My guide said, 'It is well that you should go to see the work in the schools.'" Next moment we were standing on the bare rocky ground, as real to us as the earth world is to you. Again before us rose that terrible wall of darkness, but there was this difference, that at one place a rough track seemed to be worn away which led into the darkness. "How was it," I inquired, "that the officer did not come out by this route?" "It is far easier than the way by which he emerged. The road into hell is always easy," my guide replied. "The road out of hell is always hard. This you should surely know. Shall we have to climb up that awful precipice?" "No, we go down into hell, but do not become part of hell. Hell is a state, not a place, and thus, though we perceive others in that state, and perceive also the evil atmosphere they draw around them, we do not ourselves partake of that state. In this world, where thoughts and forms are as real as the physical is on the earth, we can only feel the evil effects of hell by becoming part of it. That, unfortunately, is possible. Many a soul who has come here with a desire to do good has fallen and become a part of hell, just as on earth men who go to work among the fallen, alas, may be led astray by those whom they come to save. If that should happen to you, then you would be unable to return by this road, and would have to climb up the precipice." I became afraid and cried, "Don't go. Let me not risk it. I am safe where I am." But he answered, "Here there is no standing still. You must progress either upwards or downwards, and this journey must be taken. But fear not, am I not with you? Moreover, spirits do not fall in this division of hell. Here the worst is past. It is when they go down to the lower divisions of hell that the danger arises." Thus encouraged, we began to descend the path, and the dread darkness closed over us. For a moment I felt appalled, but the firm grip of my guide's hand gave me strength and encouragement. Then I began to perceive that from him, and to a lesser extent from Gone West, me, there flowed out a kind of light which enabled us to proceed along the path, though we were unable to see much on either side at any distance. Suddenly we were aware of a great building set right across our path, and we found that the road we were walking upon ran under a doorway into it. There was no way round it, for on either side I found the walls of rock towered up and were absolutely unscalable. "What is this place?" I inquired. "Enter and see," replied my guide. We entered the archway, and it seemed as if our presence was already known, for at once a door opened and we passed into a covered courtyard. What a dazzling light! After the awful darkness through which we had passed, I felt dazed for a moment, but soon I was able to realize everything. Around me were tall buildings on four sides, rather like a great college quad, except that it was much higher and there was a roof instead of open sky. There appeared to be several stories, for there were several rows of windows, and from every one of these a soft light shone. Some light, too, seemed to come from the building itself, I mean from its very walls. Then I noticed a spirit standing by the door. I knew at once that he was of the same nature as I myself, though more advanced, I mean he was not like my guide who is far above me. I therefore inquired of him, "What is this building?" He replied, "It is a house of refuge, a school and a guardhouse combined. One might call it a missionary clearinghouse. To us come down from the realms above spirits who desire to help the unfortunate beings in hell. Back to us come those messengers of hope who have been down to hell. To us come all those who, having begun to progress, need helping upwards, and, finally, hither come those who need only to be taught, that they may leave hell altogether for the realm above. Besides these duties, we also bar the way, so that none of the inhabitants of hell may attempt to reach the realm above save by the hard path which is ordained for them. The road you have trod is for those beings in that realm who desire to do good in hell, or such as you, who are brought here by their guides to enable them to learn about hell. There are other rest houses scattered along the paths which lead out of hell, to which those who desire to progress may go, but this is the great clearing house, or perhaps I might call it the base of supplies for a large number of these houses of refuge. Have I made myself dear? Perfectly, I, H. J. L., replied. This house sends out men to relieve those in charge of these houses of rest, and also those missionaries who try to persuade men to come to these houses. You further act as the final house of rest for those who are about to attempt the climb up the precipice. But where do the schools come in? He, your first remarks are quite correct, but the latter are not so plain. All in this part have to pass through the school before they can climb the precipice, as otherwise they would be hopelessly lost on reaching the top. But before they can attend the school, they have to be received into the part of the building which is the house of rest. Here they gain spiritual strength as distinct from spiritual knowledge, just as on earth you often have to nourish the children's bodies before you can teach them, so here we have to build up their spiritual strength, one might almost say their spiritual bodies, before attempting to instruct them. Compare our work with that of some of the societies on earth who rescue waifs and educate them. If you add to that the fact that the children are mostly crippled, and also mentally afflicted, you will get a very fair parallel. Gone west, at times it is almost heartbreaking, far worse than slumming on earth. Oh, how bitterly we blame those who should have done this kind of work on earth. A man is much harder to convert here. Often after a man's spiritual strength has been developed, we find he is not yet ready to acquire spiritual knowledge in the school. He sometimes runs away, and is only brought back after much search and labor. Often, alas, he sinks back for a time into his old ways, and returns to one of the lower divisions of hell. Others we have to send out on journeys, and employ them in various ways till they are ready to learn. H. J. L. May I go into the house of rest and see what it is like for myself? I inquired. My guide replied, instead of the man at the door, not yet, but you shall at another time. We will now enter the school. You will find it more in consonance with your previous knowledge, as you went to the secondary school in the realm above. The house of rest will be so unlike anything of which you are as yet aware that you would miss many things which would be of value. After seeing these schools, and also those for the babes, you will be able to appreciate things more when you come to visit the house of rest. We passed through a late perpendicular archway, and, as we did so, I realized that the place was a castle as much as a college. Indeed, I found that there were no external windows at all, for these would have admitted only darkness, which is here more than the absence of light, being in itself a tangible thing. The only window was one which served as a light to guide the wanderers outside to this harbor of refuge. The way this light was trimmed will astonish you. The room into which it opened was the private chapel of the men and women, for there were women here, who ministered in this place. It was distinct from the chapel for the school or the one from the house of rest. This window was behind the altar, and on earth would have been called the east window. It had, however, no stained, but merely white transparent glass. Before this altar the service of the Holy Communion was always being offered up. No sooner was one service ended than a new priest began a new service, and a fresh body of worshippers took up the responses. Thus ever, there goes up prayer for the salvation of those in hell. Out of the east window, no big one, streams out the light of faith generated by this ceaseless service of prayer and intercession. How it is in the other frontier houses, I cannot say for certain, but I gather that some are in the hands of men who, on earth, held other religious views, and in these service of intercession takes other forms than that I witnessed. Like attracts like, you see, and my guide naturally took me to the house in which I should find the system most in consonance with that to which I more or less belonged on earth. Similarly, some souls in hell are drawn towards salvation by the men who belong to this house, while others go to those in which Mohammedanism or nonconformity is dominant. But there is no bitterness here. Each house does its work, and helps other houses when it can. Thus, if a Mohammedan or nonconformist missionary were to find a man and help him, if he saw that that man's spiritual development would be quicker if he went to the house belonging to the church people, he would take him there. So, too, with the church missionaries. Moreover, this transference of rescued is constantly taking place. We do not worry about our religious, save the word, differences here. They still exist to a limited degree, but we know that as we mount higher all that is false will fade, while only the truth will remain. So we go quietly on our way. This light shining from this solitary window at the top of the building is a beacon of hope far down into hell. All the houses of rest, even the little ones scattered lower down in hell, each has its beacon thus kept ever burning. Gone west, having entered the building, we passed down a passage and through a door into a classroom. This was filled with light from the teacher, but what shall I say of the pupils? Pictured the lowest and the most degraded men reduced to the size of tiny children. Imagine them misshapen and idiots for the most part, with a low, cunning expression on their wizened faces. This will give you but a faint idea of what I saw. They were ever trying to play some stupid trick or other either on their neighbors or on the master. In addition to him, there were two other spirits who stood behind the form while he taught from the front. These three were needed, firstly, to keep the room sufficiently light, for from each of the children there seemed to exude a kind of darkness which appeared to be burnt up by the light. Further, they were needed to keep the pupils under control. They did this solely by a kind of hypnotic power, by the exercise of their will and of their mentality. If for a moment they relaxed their concentration, at once several of the boys broke out into disorder. This work must be very wearying, I said to my guide. It is, he replied. The teachers have to be relieved after a very short spell. That is why so large a number of spirits are needed even in this single institution. Are the girls taught separately? I inquired. Yes, nearly always. They need women, and these need men. Further, we do not find it wise to let the sexes mix much here. These are not innocent babes, you must remember. Though they have the spiritual development of children, they have the memories of vicious men and women. In the school for the real babes, women almost always teach and tend them, and we make practically no distinction between the two sexes. Just then three fresh teachers came in and took the place of those who were in the room when we entered. We waited for the new lesson to begin. At once a perfect pandemonium broke out, due to the withdrawal of one group of mental influences, but almost at once the newcomers by the simple power of their will had reduced the rebels to submission. There is no room for weak disciplinarians here, I remarked. You mean for men of weak will? No, and there is very little room for them anywhere over here. If a soul is weak-willed when it comes, it has to develop its will power at once. It will make no real progress till it does. That is one of our most difficult problems in these schools. Most of these fallen ones are pitiably weak-willed, though passionate enough. Then the lesson began. It was similar in its methods to that under which I learnt at my school, but what a difference in the subject matter. The truths their instructor tried to teach them were the simple, elementary, and obvious truths which we learn when we are children on earth. To these unfortunate creatures, however, they seemed terribly hard. Patiently he went over the same things again and again, but many seemed quite unable to grasp any ideas at all. It must take an endless age to teach some of these, I said to my guide. Almost endless, he replied. There are some who have been here for thousands of years as you reckon time. They have even lost their memories, but what good does it do if they are so hopeless as that? All the time, he replied, they are learning discipline, and that is much. Sooner or later they will learn other things. There is always hope, and time, what is it? It is an invention of men on Earth which, fortunately, has never reached here. This is some of the finest work done in this land of the undying, but it is very exacting work. We will now visit the girls' class. Really, of course, they are degraded women who are striving to make progress, but they are harder to control than the boys. As he spoke, we left the room, and, passing along several long passages, came to another classroom. Gone West. On entering this, I found it was a class of girls, with three women teachers, but I had hardly time to take it all in before a tremendous uproar broke out, and several little girls rushed up to me. Now, although I usually like children, I felt an instinctive shrinking from these vicious women in their immature bodies. I felt there was nothing really childlike in them. I tried to shake them off, but they clung so close that I thought I should never be able to get away from them. But the schoolmistresses, having by now reduced the others to order, at length fetched away those who were clinging to me. You see how strong still their old vicious habits are, and how weak their wills. Your entrance has completely upset them merely because you are a man. It is terrible, I replied. But how do you manage to keep them here at all? Do you do it by force? For their wills are so weak that they cannot possibly keep even to the idea of progressing for long. He replied, no force, as you understand the word, is employed. But, at the same time, we exert all our influence to keep them on the right path. Their very weakness helps us once we have got them here. They find it very difficult to make up their minds to go away, and so remain and learn. Still, of course, some do go back to wallow in the mire. I noticed that the mistress was unable to make much progress owing to our presence, which distracted the little girl's attention. I was therefore not surprised when my guide said, "We will be going. You have seen enough now." After leaving this classroom, we went up many flights of stairs till we at length reached the top story. Here we entered the chapel, and the light of faith was so intense that I could only bear it for a very short time. As I have already described to you what happens there, I shall not do so again. Soon after we left the house of rest and toiled, slowly up the road by which we had entered hell. Once back on the ground above and out of that horrible darkness, we rested for but a short time, and then seemed to be wafted through the air in an instant back to this part of our realm. Now, said H. J. L., I must be leaving you. He rose and floated away, and gradually the landscape became dark and indistinct. Then I sank into oblivion. Gone West, Chapter 20, He Visits the School for the Babes Who Knew Not Faith, Letter from H. J. L. March 21, 1914. A short time after the visit to the school of those who are progressing, I was taken to the school of the babes. Again I went down a kind of road with my guide into the darkness, and as before found a building right across it. On entering this I found a courtyard, not so high as the other one, but much larger. In it were all manner of trees and flowers, and a pretty sparkling fountain. Here numbers of children were playing about. These were far different from those I had seen before. Their young baby faces corresponded to their immature bodies. They were like earth children for the most part, and not like those men in the form of children whom I had seen on my last visit to hell. These were they who had never sinned dash, but not having any knowledge of God or faith, have to learn of these, and as they learn their little spiritual bodies develop until it is time for them to pass on to the realm of half-belief, when they go to the secondary schools. Rosie Dawn is an example, and well known to you. Now this school was under the control of Sister Maria, who has often spoken through you, and as she has given you many details, I shall not repeat them, only adding what I consider necessary to complete the picture. I should add that I had particularly asked to be taken to this school rather than any other, as Rosie Dawn had come from it, and also Sister Maria. On entering one of several doors which opened into the quad, I found we were in a kind of creche, where all the immature and premature children went. How soon may it be said that a soul comes into existence when a child is conceived? I inquired. It is evidently not at birth, my guide replied. Even I cannot tell you the precise moment when the soul enters the fleshy home which clothes it, but it is extraordinarily early. As soon as the germ has definitely ceased to be a germ and has begun to grow into a human body, a soul enters it. But we do not know how God performs this wonder. That is hid, even from us to whom much is plain. Of this at least you can be sure, that long before the child quickens, a soul has become enshrined in it. I now directed my attention to the scene around me, and saw that the creche was full of gentle, sweet-faced women who watched over the little immature atoms. We passed to other rooms, and found that in each new one the babes were more advanced than in the last. At length we reached a long room with a table down the middle. This was the one you saw in the mirror, and I gathered it was the top form of the school. Here I met Sister Maria, whom I greatly liked, but found she was so much more spiritual than I that it was difficult to keep in touch with her. "Do you have a chapel with continuous service?" I asked. "Oh yes," she replied. "Work and pray. You know the old monastic proverb." My guide spoke, "There is no arrangement here for the light from the chapel being sent out like a beacon, as in the other house. This is not a house of refuge, and no lost souls from hell come here to pollute this happy spot. The children are born here by their guides or guardian angels, who, though they have no work to do on earth, yet have the same sort of work as any of us here. Generally, if possible, a relative of the dead child is brought, if suitable, to mother it. But, alas, many have no such relatives here. They, the relatives, are often too evil to be permitted to help. No evil thing is admitted within these walls, although it stands in hell. Gone west, here, you see, there is no need to have separate religious houses. These children carry no preconceived ideas of religion with them, and have nothing to unlearn. This is but one of the many points in which they differ from the others. Hence here we find Roman Catholics, churchmen, and nonconformists all joining in the good work. I. And who are the women who do this work? He. Except those who are related to the children, they are those who, loving children much, yet for some reason had none, or lost them in early childhood. I perceived that even these children had their little naughty ways as on earth, though to a less degree. My guide said, "This must be so. If they were incapable of evil, where would free will be? But it will never develop to any considerable extent here, and soon will vanish as they progress. You, too, can sin after death, but whereas theirs is the seed of evil, yours is the fruit, and now difficult to destroy. Now let us away." So again I scaled the path which leads out of hell. Goodbye, H. J. L. Gone West, Chapter 21. He visits the great house of refuge in hell. Transvision and conversation during night of 23rd of March 1914. I found myself standing beside H. J. L. on an expanse of open down. He said, "I have recently been to see the house of refuge. You will remember that I was not allowed to see over that at first." J. W. "Yes, I remember perfectly." H. J. L. "Well, having come down through the darkness by a road such as those I have previously described, but not the same as either, I entered the roofed, in courtyard as before. There was a school here also, but this time I crossed the quad at an angle, and passing under a classical or Renaissance doorway, entered a passage. I should say that this building was in the Renaissance, not the perpendicular, style. From the passage we passed through a door into a large room which was empty save for a few couches and a table in the center. My guide spoke, "This room forms the anteroom for the school. Those spirits who are ready to be taken in are admitted here. They're often very weak, and at first are placed under the guidance and control of a special teacher. He or she watches over them for the whole time, and only after a while are they deemed sufficiently strong to attend the proper classes. They need individual attention at first." "Are they kept here for the whole time?" "No. This is the room which connects up school and refuge home. It's a sort of isolation ward. After a time, as soon as they are strong enough to get about properly, they are taken to a sort of study, one for each pupil and his teacher. See." He led me out of the room into the corridor and through a doorway opposite. Here I found a much smaller room, and in it was a bright male spirit and on a couch a small misshapen child. The bright spirit was playing on a harp, a beautiful soothing hymn. Music soothes pain, and that unfortunate one is suffering terrible mental pain, said my guide. We entered another study, and here another exhausted spirit was being treated. What is he doing? I asked, indicating the bright spirit who was making signs over the body of the patient. My guide replied, he is lending him some of his magnetic fluid. The patient is weak in willpower, and this spirit is treating him. The method is analogous to that of the magnetic healer on Earth. We then returned to the anteroom and passed through a door at the opposite end. This led into the house of refuge proper. We found ourselves in a kind of hospital ward. There were no bedclothes on the beds, if so I can call them, and on these lay tiny children. Now the most extraordinary thing about it was that the children who were nearest the door through which we had entered were by far the most active and strong, yet they were the smallest. As we moved towards the opposite end of the dormitory, where there was another door, I noticed that the children grew larger and larger, but at the same time they seemed more flabby, dark, and indistinct. My guide said, I will explain this difficulty to you. These spirits when in hell appeared tall, fixed and strong. The more evil they were, the stronger they were. Their spiritual bodies were made of evil and darkness, just as ours are of goodness and light. Gone west. When, however, they begin to repent and come here, the evil principle within them grows weaker and weaker, and as it does so the real spiritual body develops slowly. Thus at first these rescued spirits grow weaker and weaker, and then they become as little children in very truth. Once this has happened, they are able to go on to the school where they begin to grow again, though often very slowly. I asked, but where do they get this element of light from which the spiritual body develops? He replied, even in hell men retain some little spark of spiritual truth. They cannot help it, for it is implanted by God. It is the divine element in all, which, however much it may be submerged, can never be quite extinguished. Even in hell men learn in spite of their evil will, thus they learn that death does not end life, often they wish it did. Once they begin to grow better, they grow weaker, and so hell becomes more and more hateful to them. For in hell the strongest is he who is most wicked, and the strongest oppresses and cruelly ill-treats those who are weaker than he. And there is no death to intervene. Is the pain, then, in hell? I inquired. Yes, only it is mental and spiritual suffering, but to the souls there it is as real as physical suffering is on earth, just as here the earth on which we stand, though immaterial to the physical world, seems real and material to us. Yes, they suffer, but no friendly death comes to end the anguish of the wretched victims. The old descriptions of hell, though to the modern world they seem gross and materialistic, in reality were not so very inaccurate. They were rough-hewn and couched in materialistic language, but much of the apparent materialistic detail is due to two facts. Firstly, that to the spirit these experiences seem as materialistic as men's do to them. Secondly, many of the finer distinctions made by the spirits have failed to penetrate the medium's brain, whereas the more materialistic obtained a ready reception. I. Then there were mediums long ago through whom spirits in hell could send messages, certainly. And, further, at times men who were still alive have been able to visit these realms when their bodies were in a trance and carry back some recollection of what goes on here. Dante is perhaps the finest exponent of this kind of revelation. Then Dante's great work is not the mere figment of his poetic brain based on his own religious views. No. It is a real revelation seen in the trance state, but molded into its present shape by the poetic imagination and slightly colored by the preconceived religious views of the medium. These changes took place when he set to work to put it into literary form. He had no misunderstanding of the facts immediately after he returned to the normal state. He ceased, and we passed out of the room into another. Here we found the spirits just as they came in from hell. Rescuers were constantly arriving, bringing some poor unfortunate being with them. These they handed over to others, who received them kindly, reasoned with them, and urged them to undergo medical treatment. It was not always easy to persuade them to do this, and even while I was there, several went out of the house of refuge back to hell. Perfect freedom is the law here, and if a man wishes to be foul, foul he will be.